The agents hunt down a man targeting those who exhibit signs of religious significance.
Could he be a crazed killer, or could he be the devil himself?
This is not happening.
These ligature marks on his neck are consistent with rope or fabric burns, strongly suggesting that he was strangled. But there seems to be an awful lot of blood loss here.
His parishioner said the Reverend Finley was bleeding from his hands like the wounds of the crucifixion.
Stigmata?
A sign bestowed by God upon the righteous.
I don't see any wounds here on his hands or wrists or otherwise.
No. I think this is a case of too much faith. And too much sugar.
What are you doing?
It's fake.
Welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. I am your host, Mike, and with me, as always, my good friend, Andrew. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good, Mike. How are you doing tonight yourself?
I'm doing well.
How much snow?
Doing well.
How much snow have you got down there where you are?
Not much anymore. We had the big blizzard a week or so ago, and that dumped, I want to say, 13 inches on us.
Ooh.
And it has been drizzly and rainy the last few days, so it's all pretty much gone.
Yeah, we had a pretty good patch of freezing rain ourselves, so everyone was slipping and sliding, mm-hmm. and it was generally not so.
Everyone's staying safe?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's good.
Nobody knows how to drive, though, so you know, you're just trying to avoid getting hit. That's all it is.
You know, it's amazing. It is amazing. Every year they forget.
They forget.
Get a couple inches of snow, and suddenly it's a madhouse out there.
So that's what we're doing tonight, eh? We're changing the official tone of the podcast to the People Drive Like Shit podcast.
Yeah.
I think that the people out there would be interested in that. X-Files. This is a little bait and switch of our own here.
You know, it is an X-File based on how crazy people get and how, again, how much they forget how to drive.
It is true.
It's the X-File. But no, we are talking Revelations today.
Episode 11, in season 3.
Yeah, good old religious episode, something for Scully to nibble on.
It's always Scully for the religious episodes, eh?
Well, yeah.
I mean, she wears the cross, so therefore.
She has to. She is a typecast character. She is
contractually obligated.
To believe.
Yeah.
In this, at least.
Well, and that's going to be my note for the show, is ultimately this divide that the writers insist on giving the characters, that if it's religious, Mulder doesn't believe it, and if it's supernatural, Scully mm-hmm. doesn't believe it, and yet it makes no sense. You know, there's no good reason why they couldn't realistically find some common ground, but the show needs tension.
Yeah, and I'll have some things to say about that too, but what do you say we get into it, sir?
Let us open our prayer books to the church.
Everybody turn to page 321.
The Church of Arlie Ermey.
Church of Arlie Ermey.
Which I gotta say.
You're a little more subdued in this, right?
Oh, he's brilliant. He's
great.
The best part of this episode for me, to be honest.
Oh, yeah.
And he's shockingly fleeting that he has his presence in this episode.
It's so sad.
It is.
Why would you spend that kind of money?
Well, maybe he wanted to do it.
I mean, like, why would you spend it and not use him?
Yeah.
Like, give him the character of the evil man or something?
He would have been good at that, too, actually.
I think he would have been great.
I want to talk briefly about the writer, Kim Newton.
Yeah.
She has done Quagmire is the other episode, which mm-hmm. is dramatically popular for a certain
sect
type of X-File viewer.
Yep.
It's a reasonably good script here, but only mm-hmm. two episodes written by Ms. Newton. I'm surprised by that.
Yeah. I'm not sure what she went on to do or if she stayed with the show. I can't. The name right off the bat isn't really ringing a bell other than Quagmire.
So. Well, according to the X-Files wiki, just two writing credits for Revelations and Quagmire on IMDb. Just a producer, but has, you know, done other writing credits.
Okay.
Nothing else that really jumps. A show called Las Vegas. She wrote in 2004.
So not a whole
lot. Not a whole lot. Some high incident episodes, a couple of New York undercover episodes. So going into more conventional crime.
Well, let me tell you, she will always be remembered by the X-Files fan.
Oh, absolutely.
For Quagmire.
For Quagmire. And directed by David Nutter. So, I mean, capably handled, for sure.
We open A reverend speaks to his congregation about a young girl's shaken faith. Is there such a thing as miracles, or are the stories in the Bible just make-believe and fairy tales? He consoled her by saying, yes, they exist, and while people today expect proof and science for their truths, there are those things that are wondrous by nature, and they need no rationale, no explanation. With this booming inflection in his voice, his sermon takes a wild turn as he raises his clenched fists for emphasis. Blood begins dripping from between his fingers to the awe and amazement of the parishioners. They begin genuflecting, clasping hands over their mouths in wonder at the spectacle. Open your souls to the divine possibilities. It is then and only then you will truly understand the awesome powers of the Almighty Lord. After the sermon, the Reverend is in his dressing room, I guess. It's a little bit theatrical. He takes off his eyeliner. An elderly man comes in. He was impressed with the sermon and wanted to let him know that some of them still believe. He approaches the Reverend. You've had quite an effect on a lot of people, me most of all. As the elderly man puts a hand on the Reverend's shoulder, the holy man's face suddenly turns from appreciation to fear of rape. The man spins him around, grabs him by the throat with one hand, and lifts him out of the chair, pinning him high on a nearby wall. With a closing shot of the Reverend's classy white boots, we see blood drip onto them, forever tarnishing their pristine Elvis impersonator-like quality.
The resale value completely trashed.
Completely gone. Yeah. Out the window. How'd this up when he grabbed ya?
It's pretty good.
Literally.
I mean, I think that as soon as I saw the blood coming out of his hands, I was like, oh, okay, that's a blood pack. That's an effect.
Oh, yeah.
Something there. And, you know, if he doesn't die at the end of this, he's going to get found out. And, like, this is a very bad career choice that he's making here.
This is like the Las Vegas of churches.
Well, it's Pennsylvania. So
one and the same.
It's well known for its highfalutin church acts. Yeah.
Yeah. Small town Pennsylvania and Las Vegas equal. So
my initial take on this is as soon as he started going into the science versus miracles aspect, I was like, okay, here we go. This is going to be the role reverse of Mulder's the skeptic and Scully's the believer.
Yeah.
And I thought back to Miracle Man, which is the first religious-styled episode they did. And I thought they didn't really go this way then. I think
they almost went reverse.
Yeah, yes. Mulder, with his sort of Samantha fascination, was the prime mover on that one. But here, you know, it's definitely they're gonna move into Scully overdrive for religious sentiment. But my big takeaway is Arlie Ermey. I mean, he is just so good in this classically underused role. He's playing such a vulnerable character, which
a little bit different than Full Metal Jacket.
It's well, and anything else that he's done. I mean,
right? He's such a powerful personality that he seems a little too subdued. It's a little uncomfortable. It's great, but it's just like, man,
so good. I
mean, that's, yeah.
And I'll be honest, this is the apex of the episode for me. Is his dramatic performance here? It's
episode over, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, it's just there are problems. I've got a lot of notes on this one, but my main problem is that him being raised up by his throat and lifted off the ground. Okay, I mean, there's a little bit of turning it up to 11 that our elderly supervillain. His first power is going to be super strength and then burn a nation of the hands. But if you're being raised up, like if you're being lifted by your throat by someone who is so strong that they can lift you off the ground, then the weight of your body is going to be going the other way. And there's no way you are saying anything or gasping, you know, it's going to be gross.
So you're saying he would have had a broken neck, kind of asphyxiated on the spot.
I don't think it would be immediate, but I think that he would have been there just like turning blue immediately. There would be no, oh my Lord, or whatever he ends up saying. It was so obvious that he was standing on a box and they were running the scene. Wait a minute.
You don't mean he actually did this?
He's tough, but he's not that tough. I mean,
come on. All right.
I just feel like the raising off the ground was an unnecessary thing when you then also burn his throat, you know, with your super burnination power. It's like, choose one. You know, don't need them both. Okay. You're not Darth Vader.
I suppose he could have just wrung his neck in the chair there.
He could have. Could have done the old garrote action or, you know, stab him with a crucifix or, I don't know. It's just like, why such an overt method of killing other than it's an X-File and it's got to be spooky?
It's so, X-Files, man.
I mean, I loved it for Arlie and Ermey, but the whole death scene at the end was like, okay, we're going to go big, are we?
So even here, before you allow the episode to tell you what's going on, you just have problems with it.
Yeah, very much. I was like, yeah, why is he Darth Vader? You know?
Okay, enough of this.
I know what we're getting. And
skip. I have
some issues. Yeah, it's ultimately a skip. But there's some stuff to like. I'm not going to poo-poo the entire episode. But this immediate shift to the unexplainable superpower. And they're never going to explain it. They're never going to even try and explain it. They're just going to gloss over everything that this guy does, every way he manages to elude and survive. It's just, he's obviously the devil. And anyway, it's a little
questionable eluding techniques in the future, which I'll probably draw attention to. But.
Anyway, I have nattered on enough about this. We probably want to.
I think we know where Andrew sits, ladies and gentlemen.
I have staked my claim.
All right, so coming back from the commercial, the agents are on the scene. Scully is doing her examination. The marks around the neck are consistent with rope or fabric burns. Mulder, on the other hand, is more interested in the performance parishioners claim to have witnessed. He checks his hands for any cuts. This is a case, he says, of too much faith. He dips his finger into the blood pooling beneath the Reverend and sips it. And too much sugar. He knew it was fake. He unbuttons the man's shirt to reveal a blood pouch on his chest with tubing, just like the others.
Others?
I've been tracking a series of international religiously motivated murders. All of the victims have been so-called stigmatics, and all of them have been frauds, like the Reverend here.
According to certain religious lore, at any given time there are 12 stigmatics in the world, representing the 12 apostles.
It's a claim that's wholly unsubstantiated, though there have been many pretenders, 11 of whom have been murdered in the past 3 years.
11? Any clue as to the motivation?
Either we're dealing with a psychotic religious fanatic who's hell-bent on exposing these kind of frauds, or a less programmatic psycho who harbors a murderous resentment towards the church, or maybe it's just a very disgruntled altar boy.
I do give them credit for finding an innovative way to bring the FBI onto this crime, which in no way should involve the FBI. Although, I suppose if there have been 11 murders, then it is serial in nature. So, theoretically, that can bring them in, especially if they cross state lines. But,
right.
I mean, this whole thing of Mulder being interested in tracking religious-motivated murders, sure, it's convenient. But at the same time, like, if he doesn't believe in it, why is he interested in it?
Yeah, that's a little bit of a blurry line for me also. I think he would be maybe aware of it, but readily tracking it, I don't know that. Because if he doesn't, his whole shtick is if it's paranormal, he's going to keep an eye on it.
You know how you fix this?
He doesn't believe in religious stuff. So if he sees a bunch of religious people being killed, he already assumes it's just some dude, some crazed person.
Yeah.
Not some religious supernatural thing going on. So the fact that he's actively following this case is a little, doesn't make sense.
Well, you know how you fix this? You make it that Scully is the one who found the case and brought him along for it, as opposed to this thing of him tracking the murder. And,
yeah.
Like, it's always him, you know, why not have her?
She could have brought it in and say, you know those cases that have been making the news the last couple of years about reverends and death?
Well, I suppose they didn't want to, and you could have had it be that it's her story and then he's reluctantly drawn in. Mm-hmm. Although they've kind of played that card already they'll play it later in Chinga.
They'll play it there in All Souls. And
All Souls. And they're all sort of similar. So I suppose they weren't ready to do that yet.
No, this is the first real separation of church and paranoia. Paranormal that they do. Yeah. I think this is the first one that kind of sets that tone for, okay, we're going to put Scully in the believer role and Mulder in the skeptic, and it's going to be religious based because Scully is a Christian.
Yeah. Yep.
Or Catholic.
The same thing, technically.
We don't say that. they'll kill you, man.
What, the Christians aren't Catholics and the Catholics? Well, I could say you, the Catholics are Christians, but maybe. Anyway, this is a diversion we don't need to have.
This is what these episodes do, man.
Yes, they always get you.
You got to get into that every little sect of the religious. Okay, so we go to Ridgeway Elementary. The bell rings to start class, and the teacher rallies her kids for math class. The camera circles onto a young boy, Kevin, who uses a straw to shoot a spit wad at a girl. The teacher tracks it and zeroes in on him. She brings him to the front of the class in an act of humiliation as she asks him to perform a division problem on the chalkboard to the laughter of his classmates. She mockingly questions if he knows the division sign, more laughter. And I think this teacher would probably be fired today because you just can't make kids feel bad anymore. Well,
amen, brother. I was just looking at this going, good God, this is like, it's a classic teacher survival strategy.
You know, right.
Us versus them. But I look at this like, holy crap, you're setting Kevin up for a lifetime of crime. Tell you what,
she is about to be canceled.
Yeah.
He grabs the chalk to write down the equation, but as he begins to write, he notes a pain in his hands, and suddenly he begins bleeding from his palms to the shock of the entire room. Not to be alarmed, though, this is just another one of Kevin's antics. It's just like him to be the center of attention. Later on, the agents arrive. We have two repeats here. The school nurse, Andrew, could you tell me who that is?
She was very familiar when I saw her, but I didn't cheat, and I couldn't remember.
No, that's fine. She's probably not super familiar, but she was one of the undercover agents tailing Scully in Little Green Men at the airport.
Yes, at the airport, yeah.
And then the social worker, who appears in a few episodes, her next one notably is Unrequited as the grieving widow.
Gotcha.
So the social worker informs them of an incident last year, Kevin's bleeding hands and feet. Their first concern is always abuse at home. Kevin's father was arrested, but the state dropped charges for lack of evidence. His mom won custody, and his father is now in an institution. Apparently, he locked himself and the boy in a house, claiming he needed to protect the boy. He was chosen by God, waving a gun at the police.
So what's the bigger crime there?
I mean, they're both weird.
They're both weird. Yet the that moment, I don't know if you've touched on or will, Kevin's temperature being taken and the thermometer spikes over, like it easily goes over 104 and then explodes. It's like, would that not draw some attention, some scrutiny? You know, maybe like,
this isn't normal.
He's running a bit of a fever.
Watch the mercury.
Yeah.
Everyone out of the room.
Exactly. It's like, let's get him a crash cart in here because, wow, that's odd. It's such a throwaway, and they do tend to do this sometimes to set the mood. They do these things where they drop in weird things that happen that should be an episode in and of themselves, but they're just done for flavor. And you know me, my favorite example is the friggin' drink fountain in De Handy Verlitz. But this is that, you know, this crazy world-altering paranormal thing that they just go,
uh-huh. And they don't really touch on that. We get in this episode that he is some sort of important child, and certain things he is able to do, and maybe certain powers, but they don't explain the thermometer thing in any way, shape, or form.
He's the devil, clearly.
Well, I think they did it on the wrong guy. They had to do it on the old guy, right? But so outside the room, the boy's mother arrives. She is visibly upset and concerned that the FBI was called in. Mulder tells her that someone might be targeting people like Kevin, people exhibiting wounds that might be interpreted as having religious significance. As the nurse and Scully tend to Kevin, we see the temperature and the thermometer rise. Suddenly, the end of the glass tube pops off from the heat. The social worker and his mom argue about Kevin. She wants to put him back in daycare. See how quickly I glossed over that, because it's not important.
No, exactly.
She wants to put him back in care until they can investigate further. And the mom gets defensive, claiming innocence and ever hurting her child. She's fought a battle over him before, and she won't do it again.
Get out of here, Scully.
Kid's hands were definitely cut, Mulder.
We're taking him into custody. We've warned them about his safety. I don't know what else we can do.
Have you determined how his hands were cut?
No, not yet, but my guess is that the kid did it to himself. Boy has his father taken away. He hurts himself to relieve his dad of guilt and to get him back.
Maybe we should talk to his father.
He's in an institution.
His father said that he needed to be protected. Maybe he knows from whom.
He's bleeding again, isn't he?
Yes, how did you know that?
Because the faithful know.
Mr. Crowder, the claims you've made for your son may have put him in danger. Do you know that?
The child was in danger long before I ever made the claims. Since the day he was born, they've been watching him.
They?
The forces of darkness. They will come in the form of a powerful and respected man.
His forces, what do they want?
To claim all souls. You must understand, this is the great war between good and evil.
Armageddon.
God will find someone to stop it. Someone who is strong enough to make the sacrifice.
My favorite moment in that scene are the lance glances.
I was waiting for it. Anytime someone looks out the window.
It's TM.
TM.
This is not happening in another X-Files podcast. Yeah, the business in here is definitely a setup for Scully. Like, the father looks at her and says, God will find someone strong enough to stop it. And, like, literally looks at Scully for 22 seconds.
Yeah. And that's not the only time in this episode either where she gets put on the pedestal.
Yeah. And then this whole go full circle to find the truth. I mean, if you want Scully to save the kid, why are you being cryptic? Like, why is it a puzzle-based protection scam?
Because that's how religious people work. You know, everything is, you know, they just got to allude to the truth, not tell you what they got to
It's a journey that you have to go to on your own.
You have to uncover it, yes.
If I just told
God
you,
God works in mysterious ways.
Yeah, all right.
You have to earn it. We go now to the Lindley Home for Kids. In the dark house, the children are gathered around as Kevin tells a ghost story. He once again is whoring himself out for attention. The scene is intercut with shots of a large man.
Child. Why do you have to be like that?
Just fucking around. The scene is intercut with shots of a large man, seemingly the man the boy is describing in his story. The man is shrouded in darkness. As Kevin continues the story, he ramps up the fear to the other kids' intrigue. We see the man walking, closer and closer. Suddenly, he enters the room and the kids scatter. He is a large, bald man, like Kevin is describing. He approaches Kevin and inspects his hands. Commercial.
Okay, Michael Berryman is the name of this guy. And
The Hills Have Eyes.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Oh, yeah, he does great.
And the whole segment, it's so classic as tropes go, the idea of the ghost story, and then he arrives at the pinnacle of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And it works here because the actor is freaking perfect for it. But
he's perfect.
And there's a little...
I don't know. How do you think that audition process goes? Like, look, we want you because you're frightening.
I think he probably knows where he fits in the Hollywood universe. Absolutely. And he's like, yeah, I play your geeks, you know.
I play your geeks.
The Enigma was taken. He wasn't ready to come on the show. So.
That's true. He would have been a great Enigma character.
Absolutely.
He could have played Lenny.
Yeah.
The drunk.
But I liked it enough for that. All I needed for him to say in that moment was, Kevin, come with me if you want to live.
Come with me if you want to live. Oh, yeah. That would have been a good time.
Have they done that kind of setup before in other X-Files episodes where a kid tells a ghost story and then the monster arrives just as the punchline gets delivered? You've seen it before in other shows, but I don't know if the X-Files...
I've seen it, yeah. I don't think they do it. Off the top of my head, I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Listeners can correct us.
Yes. It's the only time they chime in.
No.
Later that night, Mulder speaks to some of the kids for a sketch composite. They have some colorful descriptions of the man who took Kevin. Meanwhile, Scully notices a bloody handprint on Kevin's bed. Mulder shows her the composite, although he's not impressed. She feels this isn't the same MO as the other cases because none of them were abducted. But Mulder reminds her none of them were 10-year-old boys. Kevin's mom looks at the drawing and exclaims that it's Owen, their gardener. Okay, so she knows the man.
Yeah.
That's a twist.
That's a nice twist as opposed to,
yeah,
I've never seen him before. And kudos to that sketch artist. Like, it's...
That is great.
It's a wonderful... A, it's spot on for him, but B, it's just so animated.
It's got character.
It's like, I fully expected a Kaiser Soze like sketch from The Usual Suspects, but in this case, he's like... Rawr. It's so good.
Tell you what, it is the best composite I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
Watching a lot of documentaries, they are nothing like that.
But I have to ask, for Owen to just walk in and snatch Kevin, it's like, what kind of protection do they actually put on him? You said you were going to protect him. Well, we put him in a room.
He was in a room with kids. How could he pick him out?
I was going to be by the next morning. I mean, we were...
We leave the doors unlocked.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Meanwhile, with Owen, Kevin and he chat. He shows him wood-carved animals he made and tells him he's safe and that he is a special boy. Kevin wants to go home, but Owen asks him for his trust. He wants him to think of Owen as his guardian angel. A car pulls up outside, and he tells Kevin not to say a word, or I'll slit your mother's throat.
He does say that. It's a scary character reversal. Yeah,
he does. You know, it's funny. I just thought that scene was funny because, you know, he wants Kevin to be protected and save him, but he just kind of barks that order at him. Don't say a word.
Is there any particular...
It struck me as a very, very kidnapper-esque thing to say.
It is. He is not completely stable, I think, is the takeaway there. But
absolutely.
I look at that and go, tactically, is that your best move to rush downstairs right. and confront these people?
Like, with a shotgun.
Why not just hide upstairs, stand your ground.
And just be quiet.
Yeah, like, shush, they're not going to come up here.
Well, he doesn't do that. He grabs his gun and rushes downstairs to the front door, but the agents surprise him, guns already drawn, and take control of the scene. Scully notes the attic rope, pulls down the ladder. In the attic, Kevin looks towards the door being lowered, but when Scully peeks in, he is mysteriously gone.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy.
Kevin's got some surprises.
Yep. They bring Owen upstairs, sit him in a chair, and cuff him for a brief interrogation. You know, standard.
Mm-hmm.
Owen claims he was trying to protect Kevin, and he was asked by God. Mulder is unimpressed. The two get into a war of words, scripture versus reality, code versus law. Owen calms and looks at Scully. He calls attention to her necklace and says her convictions are important. How can you help Kevin if you don't believe?
Damn it, that's cross. It just gets such mileage in this series.
It really does. You know, that it gets her into more shenanigans.
She should just get a tattoo, you know, and stop wearing that thing.
Stop flaunting it, Scully. We know you want attention, too.
Or, frankly, get a bigger one.
Yeah.
Get, like, a 6-pound solid gold number.
Flava Flav style.
That's right.
Big, big clock.
Big clock. That would be a sign of the 90s for sure.
Owen says, just because you don't understand sacrifice doesn't mean you set the rules for him. Whatever he asks, meaning God, he will do. With that, he stands and runs towards the attic window. Despite the agent's protests, he jumps out. Amazingly, he's uninjured. He gets up and scampers off after snapping the cuffs apart.
Yeah.
Mulder runs to pursue, but Owen has seemingly disappeared by the time he gets outside.
It's like we have the unseen presence of Howard Gordon in this episode.
He's big, so yeah.
Yeah.
He snaps the cuffs.
Snap the cuffs and survive a 2-story fall through a window onto his face.
No issues at all. Because he did go face first out of that window.
You think that's going to be a footnote in the report?
Well, he stood up and we asked him politely to sit back down.
Yep.
But instead, he jumped out the window.
Flash forward to the review of this file with Skinner. And he's like,
yeah, I was just going to say, Skinner's like, you let him jump out the window.
So you had him restrained, did you? Oh, yeah, we had him on the chair. His hands were cuffed behind him. Oh, okay. And he got up and jumped out the window. Yeah, surprised that he chose to do that, sir. Oh, okay. Yeah, did you shoot at him when he ran away? No, I ran down to find him.
No.
And okay, and he got away from you, though, in the empty farm field.
yeah. in the empty farm field.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. He yeah. was gone. By the time I got out there, he was miles away.
He's like the Roadrunner. He just, all I saw was a puff of smoke and he was gone. It's not my finest hours, sir.
I'll say. So, nighttime, Kevin arrives home to a dark and empty home. Beams of blue light illuminate only parts of the house as Kevin investigates. The doorbell rings. It's the respected man, Andrew. He runs off to hide as the camera pans across the floor to the welcome mat. Suddenly, the doorknob falls off, red hot from something. The man enters, calling for Kevin. He wanders the home, finds a photo of the broken family and studies it for a moment. Then he looks to a nearby closet. Nothing but clothes in a hamper, but when he looks closer, he sees little blood drips running down the side of the hamper. Oh boy.
Yeah.
When he removes the lid, he is assaulted from behind by Owen, who enters into a life and death struggle with the man. He tells Kevin to run, and he does. Owen is soon bested by the elderly man, who puts hands on his throat, steam pouring out of them. The agents arrive to protect Kevin, and he asks if Scully is the one sent to protect him.
Ooh. I wish Scully.
You know, they kind of arrived on time and
yeah.
right on cue. It's like, eh.
It was convenient.
I don't know why they would go here.
Well, you always go
home, I don't know right? why they would go here.
Yeah.
If the kid was kidnapped.
Now, wait, are you saying you have problems with this episode?
Oh, absolutely. I've got problems with this episode. It struck me as strange and a little convenient that they appeared right now, right here, at a place where Kevin wouldn't be if he was kidnapped. Owen didn't tell him where he was, which means Owen still knows where he is.
Well,
so
well, maybe.
Why would he be home?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. It just seemed a little weird.
Is what it is. You know, they've only got so many locations to use. Yeah, what I want to give props to is the music in this scene. It's mm-hmm. fucking spooky, and it's new for Mark Snow. These angelic ooey chords, you know, they're pretty cool. And I did like the door handle yeah. burning off and falling on the ground, even though the whole setup of the superpower is unexplained and weird.
Yeah. Well, I think by the end of the episode, we were supposed to believe this man is in fact a devil.
Well, a devil to be sure, if not the devil.
Well, but the devil, I don't know.
I mean, you're whatever. Making up a whole world of bad and good and making these characters that will never be visited again. My ultimate issue with this episode is that it's too much story to jam into 42 minutes.
And to kind of agree with that point, they do that in every religious episode where
yes.
there is, in fact, this good and evil struggle between heaven and hell.
Yeah.
But the consequences aren't really, I don't know. It feels too big for me
yeah.
for the X-Files.
Yeah.
I'm not poo-pooing it necessarily. I'm just saying it feels very life and death for humanity, but the show is really about aliens and the life and death struggle about, it's like, it's just a little too broad.
It's too much. It's a movie is what it is. And it doesn't belong to these characters. But, I mean, they have given themselves a platform where they can do any friggin' thing they want that relates to supernatural. Yeah. So if you take a step to the left and go, miracles can be interpreted as supernatural, then it works. But I think mm-hmm. the stakes are just way too high for the show. Like, the other stories they tell are very human stories. Often there are... Mm-hmm. you know, very small stakes victories, but
compact. Yeah.
Yeah. In this case, it's like all of humanity apparently is impacted and it's like this.
Exactly.
So
it's a little too much.
Yeah.
But, so we are now at the requisite autopsy. It's been 14 hours since Jarvis died, but the body has yet to begin breaking down. His temperature is still 98 degrees and the body by all accounts is healthy. Mulder enters for some info, but before he starts, Scully asks him to smell Mr. Jarvis.
My favorite line.
It's great. She claims there is a faint floral odor, just like the catechism. He is an incorruptible soul who, when they died, would not decompose normally and would have a faint floral odor. The two get into a discussion of belief.
You're serious?
St. Cecilia, St. Francis...
And now you're suggesting that this is St. Owen?
I don't know.
Scully, those stories you're referring to are mostly regarded as hagiographic fabrications, not historical truths, just like the occurrence of the stigmata.
And what do you think this is?
This man? I mean, he was rather abnormal in life. Maybe he's decomposing abnormally.
Well, isn't a saint or a holy person just another term for someone who's abnormal?
Do you really believe that?
I believe in the idea that God's hand can be witnessed. I believe he can create miracles, yes.
Even if science can't explain them?
Maybe that's just what faith is.
Well, I wouldn't let faith overwhelm your judgment here. These people are simply fanatics behaving fanatically, using religion as a justification. They give bona fide paranoics like myself a bad name. They're no more divine or holy than that ketchup we saw on the murdered preacher. And I think once you've finished your autopsy, you'll come to the same conclusion. Say no one.
So Mulder is brutally honest with her, if not completely dismissive of her. And you can see it on her face. She's a little bit put off by the things he's saying to her. How did this strike you? This is the first time Mulder's really been kind of flippant with Scully, I would say. To her beliefs, I would say.
Well, first of all, obviously Kim Newton's done their homework on on the religious elements of the show. Whether or not it's actually true, I couldn't say, but certainly there's a lot of there, you know, that there's some depth to the episode and not letting a lot of plot points be left alone. As for this business of transforming the believer to the skeptic and the skeptic to the believer, I mean, this is the classic role reversal trope. They're going to go here a couple of times in the series. And I think that, well, we kind of touched on this before, they need to do it to make the show interesting. Like, they can't just have Mulder be immediately
swayed. They're just on the same side.
Yeah, if they had him on the same side, there wouldn't be a show, because that is part of the dynamic of the show, is one is level-headed and the other goes off the reservation, and it is that that vacation off the reservation which gets results. That's always how it works. You can't get anything done in this show if you go by the book. So it's the only way it works. And I mean, we've already poo-pooed on the idea of religious episodes. I think it has a limited success in this particular vehicle, but
And just to bookmark that, I'm not trying to poo-poo religious episodes.
No, the episodes. Do
I just think it's too broad. It's like we're saying, it's just too much. The stakes are way too high, and it doesn't get resolved in any meaningful way. And I get that there's supposed to be obscurity with the show, but I just think it feels way too big.
Well, it's also incredibly small too, right? Like they put so much fanciful notion onto the fate of this one boy determining, you know, the soul of humanity, I suppose. But there's no proof of it other than he can do some pretty crazy tricks. and we got a super devil who's chasing them. So, you know, their powers seem to provide the proof. But otherwise, there's no proof that there is an issue with Kevin being taken by the devil or whatever. Like,
right,
could just be another Tuesday morning follows after the tragedy of some kid getting killed by falling into a recycling plant grinder. I mean,
whoa, let's not spoil it.
If they haven't watched it.
Back at the office, they pulled prints. They were burned onto the skin of Jarvis's neck. He checked the prints on the NCIC, and they belonged to Simon Gates, a wealthy businessman. So there he is, a wealthy and respected man, and he's white. He got a DUI years ago, and after his sentence, he went to Israel. Mulder here brings up the Jerusalem syndrome, people who journey to Israel and suffer religious delusions associated with their journey, believing they themselves are the Messiah, among other things.
Well, this is why he's got that's why he denigrates religion, is that there is apparently empirical evidence that if you go to Jerusalem and have a little experience, you come back a psychotic person. So religion's bad, Mike. That's what he's saying.
The key takeaway is, do not go to Jerusalem, people.
Apparently.
It's best just stay out of the Middle East. Just don't do it.
Otherwise, don't do what Simon Gates did.
Yeah.
But yeah.
He surmises that Gates is a very dangerous man. He gets a call, and we want to talk about convenient and really weirdly placed things. Mulder gets a call here, and he's alarmed that the social worker took Kevin out to lunch at 1.
Yeah.
But witnesses, whoever they are, yeah, are placing him at the facility with his mom exactly at the same time. Where did this come from?
It came from the writer needing to set up the fact that Kevin's got a superpower.
And that's fine. You know, he disappeared from the attic. We didn't have an explanation. We need to set up this bi-location thing.
Yeah, it's, and they'll somehow they'll tease it out a little bit more with some explanation later. But I mean, my question is, does Kevin know he has this ability? Does he?
I have no clue.
Well, because they don't give us anything. And, yeah, you know, and Mulder will even say, too bad he didn't use this power when he needed to. You know, it's right, conveniently be able to use it, and at some times, and inconveniently not at others. So, yeah, sloppy.
Yep.
Sloppy, yeah, right, yeah.
We go here to the side of the road. Kevin and his mom are there. Her car is overheating. Who shows up, Andrew, but Simon Gates? He pulls up and offers to help. Despite her objections, he continues to assist her. He uses his bare hands to reach into the engine compartment and remove a cap, hot steam pouring out, but yet, strangely, not affecting him.
Wow.
After a moment, she realizes he's the man after Kevin and asks what he wants. He says, "Oh, I think you know." And that's a little...
a little creepy?
Suggestive. A little suggestive. You know, sex.
I want your car.
Immediately, Kevin runs off and the man shoves her to the ground. She takes a header into the concrete like a champ.
There's some good stunt work there.
That is violent.
Yep.
And hilarious. But
they probably put in some foley of her going, ugh. So we knew that she wasn't dead, because they had that issue with Heather, with Scully getting hit by the coffee table or whatever. They needed to to make sure the network needed you to know that she was fine.
Yep. Simon Gates gives chase and chases Kevin across the field, loses sight of him somehow. Ooh, surprisingly, Kevin is right back at the car and tends to his mom. What is going on, Andrew?
By location.
As Gates searches for the boy, a car comes roaring by and hits the man. It's Kevin and his mom, who is barely conscious. She's driving, but is also losing consciousness. Kevin tries to keep her awake and help her steer, but the two crash into a ditch very violently. Oh, dear Lord.
Oh, dear. So, what do you think happens to a man in his 60s when he's hit by a car doing probably 60... miles an hour, maybe more like 40 miles an hour at that rate, but plowed right into him, body flew over the hood. What do you think? What's the average injury?
Mulder got hit by a car and he's doing pretty well. He's not 60, but
the car in question screeched to a halt, slowing down.
No, you keep going. Well, no, she meant to do it.
No, she was speeding up, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah.
I think we're looking at a broken spine. You know, bleeding out.
Bones have no issue in this episode, Andrew.
No. I guess I don't.
Yeah. They are impervious.
Yeah. Anyway, all that to say that once he got hit by that car, I was like, well, he's not dead.
Well, no, of course
not. He's not dead. I mean, we're like 30 minutes in. He's not dead.
When the agents arrive, emergency services are there. The boy's mother is dead. Scully talks to him, and he feels extreme guilt over what happened, as he should. He doesn't want to go back to the shelter. She tells Mulder they're keeping the boy with them. Kevin also ID'd Gates. He rented the car under the name Farrow, one of the devil's disciples. At the end of the scene, we see Gates peering at the crash site from an easily noticeable location.
Yeah.
And that is... just one of his great undercover abilities there. That guy just sticks out like a sore thumb, but no one sees him.
Yeah, well, he's at least 50 feet away, man. Come on.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, everyone's very nearsighted here.
My favorite bit of business at the end there is Scully promising to protect Kevin. And all I can think of is, well, I hope you're going to put a detail outside this time, because you kind of screwed the pooch last time.
I hope you lock the door. So with Scully, she's watching over him. He goes to change in the bathroom and she notices he has a cut on his ribs that wasn't there earlier. Just like Christ was slashed with the spear.
And I ask you, Mike, you're what, 13 years old? You know, you've had a bit of a day. You're going to go have a bath. Do you start disrobing in front of a complete stranger who you don't know?
All the time.
Your experience with women is that you shoot spitballs at them.
Yep.
Yeah. Exactly.
Don't look. That would be the normal boy. But no. Kevin's a playa, and he wants to be looked at. He is the center of attention. I think I have said it enough in this episode where he just wants the attention.
He does.
He killed his mom to get attention of Scully.
And stabbed himself in the side to get attention now. He's worse than Army.
Yeah. The two agents here get into a disagreement. Mulder thinks she is getting way too involved with Kevin.
Never draw my bath.
Kevin has a cut under his ribs.
He was in an accident.
No, I was with the paramedics when they were looking at him. It wasn't there.
Maybe you missed it.
No, Mulder, I was paying close attention.
What do you think it is?
Yesterday I saw Kevin's hands. They were bleeding from identical wounds on the top as on the bottom. Just like in the crucifixion.
Scully.
There have been other signs. I haven't said anything until now because I haven't been sure. And I'm still not sure.
Sure of what exactly?
How Kevin was able to be in two places at once, just like St. Ignatius was able to do in the Bible.
That was in the Bible. That's a parable. It's a metaphor for the truth, not the truth itself.
Why didn't Kevin conveniently bi-locate when Owen Jarvis abducted him from the shelter?
How is it that you're able to go out on a limb whenever you see a light in the sky, but you're unwilling to accept the possibility of a miracle? Even when it's right in front of you.
I wait for a miracle every day. But what I've seen here has only tested my patience, not my faith.
So again, there's great back and forth between the agents as Mulder really refuses to see the things that she does. We get a little insight into his stance on religion in this episode and his intolerance. Likely, I would say they're trying to put forward his anger at God. I think he was raised religious. As we have seen, he was in the church in Conduit, I believe it was, in season one.
Yeah.
They're trying to play the God hurt me, so now I refuse to believe.
But they never come back to it, though. Like,
They don't.
I feel like Conduit was kind of a go-to.
It was. They hadn't really decided who Mulder was at that point.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he never goes back to church. He doesn't go to...
No.
You know, that never really is an aspect of him. I mean, the business of him and Miracle Man seeing Samantha,
yeah,
like, he almost sees that as psychological as opposed to religious. I don't buy the huge intolerance for religion, especially when there are demonstrable supernatural things happening here, like... He has seen people disappear. He has seen
The next one's about to happen.
Well, exactly. So it's like, why on earth are you being so obstinate and not examining
the evidence here? No. It's like she's trying to force feed him facts and he's just shaking his head from side to side. No.
And all I can say is it's because he's written this way. You know, it's the only way to make the episode work, and it doesn't work for me.
It doesn't work. So they hear a noise in the bathroom. Scully goes to check on Kevin, but he is again gone.
Yeah.
The bars on the window have been pried open. And by the way, where the fuck are they?
There are
bars on the window.
Oh,
I know.
Part of town.
A bad part of town. Where they are really springing for a nice room here.
It's the only one that they had available. The travel agent looked, Mike.
You just hear gunshots in the distance. Get my money.
Can I say with those bed bars? There's no way Simon Gates is getting through that little hole.
He must have been right there, and he just kind of reached in and snatched him.
I could see that happening, because he does have Darth Vader's strength. So
Yeah. So the bars are pried open. They are red hot from heat, some kind of heat. Mulder doesn't know how it was done. He must have had an acetylene torch. This is his logic. You know, he's just carrying around this torch. Yep. Scully rushes off to find Kevin's father, but Mulder isn't happy. When they visit him, he is out of it, very groggy. They attribute his lack of help to his medications. The people have been giving him tranquilizers, and they've increased his dosage. She presses him about full circle to find the truth, but he cannot answer her. In the hall, Mulder stops Scully. They tracked him to the airport under the same name, Farrow. It's here she makes a leap. She sees a recycling logo in the hall, arrows forming a circle. Gates's company owns a recycling plant near here. Mulder realizes now that her resistance to him and his ideas is because she thinks she is actually the one chosen to protect Kevin. He asks her, but she doesn't really give a satisfying answer. She says, if I'm wrong, I'll meet you at the airport. And the two go their separate ways.
I hate this scene. I hate all of it.
They did at 21st Century Recycling.
Yeah. Well, they
which is an awful composite, by the way. It's very fake image.
It's very fake. They did not need this scene at all. It doesn't add anything to the episode. They have to go back to talk to the father to, and again, this is me hating the fact that it's a cryptic clue they dropped there. And it's like, oh, I guess we'll understand later.
So, I hate the way they bring it back at the end too.
Yeah. I'm and then it's like they go to see him and now they see his chart of all the Halidol and stuff. And it's like, oh, he's actually just on drugs. Okay. So now this was a complete waste of time. And then she happens to see the recycling symbol that she could have seen any other moment in the show. And it's just like, okay, now we get the click of the mm-hmm. thing that was just sitting in plain sight is now your answer, that old trope. And they disbelieve each other so far. So I guess it's time to split the party.
Yep. Inside, Gates is quoting scripture. Kevin asks why he wants to hurt him, but Gates says it's not about want. He must die for the new age to come. Kevin bleeds again from his palms. The others were false prophets, but Kevin is the only true one of the 12. It's here Scully arrives and holds Gates at gunpoint, but the man holds Kevin as a shield and drags him upwards to a large recycler and turns it on. The metal spikes start turning fast. The metal spikes start turning fast, dragging and shredding the newspapers beneath them. As Scully approaches, he tries to jump, taking Kevin with him. But when she gets to peer over the edge, Kevin is hanging on, of course, and we see blood spatter beneath him, Gates being ground up.
Pretty horrendous way to go, yeah.
I cannot imagine what... That is a rough way to go. I'll give this episode that. That was a killer way to go.
Well, I have to think there are a couple of things here. I think Kim Newton had a tour of a recycling plant and saw that set and went,
that would be great.
That's going to feature prominently in something I'm going to write someday. You know, what a great way for
she accompanied her son Tyler to his class field trip, and it happened to be to the local recycling plant, and she saw that contraption. She's like, this is going to happen.
Yeah. As well as seeing the recycling sign and murmuring to herself, full circle to find the truth. Yes, I will use
it. Oh, I've got it. Not to mention they really edited that recycling logo. It's a triangle, ladies and gentlemen.
It is. Well, Simon Gates had a special approach to recycling.
He did.
He's a horrible person.
It's about unity. He's a horrible person.
So a couple things here. Mulder and Scully do a terrible job protecting Kevin.
Oh, no, fantastic.
This kid cannot get a break, honestly.
But he loves it. He loves every second of it.
He does.
Why? Because he is the center of attention.
You're absolutely right. I hadn't thought of it like that. He's actually cooperating.
He is both terrified and happy that he's about to be thrown into a recycling machine. He's like, you know what? This is the way to go, and everyone's focused on me right now. This is the best.
So, as is my want, often I look at these episodes, these kind of mediocre episodes. I'm going to lay it out in the line here and say, this is a kind three. And I go,
ooh.
Yeah, well, nothing in it. There's such a small number of things that I really like in this episode. Anyway, I look at this and go, what would have made it a better episode? And maybe it's a discussion to have a little bit more wholesomely in... You know, when we get to our final thoughts, but I ask you, this is the point in the episode where we get from Simon Gates his actual motivation. He needs Kevin to die for the new age to come. He's doing this for the world. You know, he's moving us forward.
That's what all the Satanists believe.
I don't know if that's true, but so my question is, would it have been a better episode to make Simon sympathetic from the outset? If we knew when he's killing Arlie Ermey, if he told him there, you have to go so I can usher in the new world order. I'm doing it for all the world. I hate what I have to do here, but I have to do it. I think it would have been much more interesting to have him be...
It would have been interesting to have him to be much more of a character rather than just this killing machine.
Yeah, the devil.
In the final sequence, he does show a little bit of humanity. It's not about wanting to do this. This is about the betterment of humanity.
Yeah.
And if he had been given that agency a little bit earlier, it would have been more interesting.
A lot more interesting for the actor to play, for sure. Because up till then, he's just pop a nice guy and whatever.
He's just Terminator.
He is. That's exactly what he is. I mean, it's funny. That's exactly what this episode is. And Scully's Kyle Reese. But
yes.
I think it would have been better.
I'll need all your clothes. Oh, man.
Let's get through it.
Yep. Okay, so 2 days later, Scully says goodbye to Kevin. Despite his insistence that he will see her again, he will not. And despite, once again, his mother being newly dead and his father being insane, he's in high spirits.
Yeah, super chipper. Yeah, he's going back to school.
He is in high spirits.
Yeah.
Mulder wants to go make the formal statement with Scully about Gates' death, but she asked him to handle it. She needs to take care of something, but she will meet him at the airport. And once you hear the sliding of the wood, you know exactly what's about to happen. Scully enters a confessional and begins her ritual. She isn't able to discuss these things with Mulder, and it's bothering her. She believes she witnessed a miracle, something that helped her save a young boy's life. Usually Mulder believes without question, but he doesn't believe anything that happened. He didn't see what she saw. Anything is possible with the Lord. He drops the line, sometimes we must come full circle to find the truth.
And she pulls out her gun and shoots him in the face.
It's the worst. Very loose tie into the episode's theme.
Yeah.
The episode ends with Scully saying she's afraid. Afraid that God is speaking, but that no one is listening. Okay. Yeah. That is the final nail in the coffin for this episode.
Ooh.
The full circle to find the truth that the father just pulls out of his dick. I don't
like it.
I don't buy it. I know what you're trying to do. It didn't work. I'm sorry. You needed to set that up better.
There's no reason for it. We've already had the epiphany with that particular phrase. They're just doing it so she can go, what? But I've heard that before.
Right. Yeah. I've heard that twice this week.
I wish people would stop conveniently saying that.
Can people stop this?
Yeah. Ugh. My favorite bit is Kevin saying, you will, when she says, maybe I'll see you again sometime. And it's like the writer's nodding and like, we're setting ourselves up for a sequel.
Kevin's coming back in 5 years.
Yeah. No, he's not.
He's up to his new shenanigans.
Kevin's wacky adventures.
He's getting together with fucking... Gibson Praise, and they're going to save the world together.
Nice. Stigmata Squad. That's what that show will be called.
Oh, man. I don't know.
Well,
we'll figure it out. So, Andrew, we don't have to stick with this episode too much longer, but give me your final thoughts. Regale the listeners with what you think about Revelations,
please. Revelations. It's a good episode, but not great. In fact, having gone through it.
I can't believe you just said that.
I know. It's because there are,
there are things,
there are
right?
things. There are a couple of things. And for me, if you give me a couple of things, I can go, all right, this wasn't a complete waste of my time. So,
and it's not, I'll be fair.
It's
got not a waste of time.
Good research in it. It's capably shot. Performances are good. I think it's, as we've said, there's just too much there. But anyway, let me get through my little block of text here. So, this is their second kick at the can after season one's Miracle Man, and they'll try again in season five with All Souls. It's the first episode where they really dive into Scully's religious conviction, and it's enough of a wedge that she goes to confession to discuss how it divides their partnership. And it's actually a good scene. I am okay with that until going full circle to find the truth. I agree that's such a lame little drop in. But I do like that scene exists because it showcases this idea that, okay, then we're really not going to get along here on this issue. So I'm
fine with that.
I'm okay with
that. I think the legitimate tension between her and Mulder not seeing eye to eye, not just for flavor, it feels very realistic here.
Yeah.
It feels, okay, these two people have different convictions, different beliefs, and they need to learn how to communicate better. That is obvious, and I think that's a good scene. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
It's very human.
So
I'm sorry.
Well, no, I get what they're trying to do there by mixing up the paradigm of Mulder the believer versus Scully the skeptic. But in a different universe, Mulder's going to have all the sorts of theories as to why what's happening is happening, as opposed to just discounting it wholesale because it's based on the religious doctrine. So, I mean, it's not as interesting if they both believe. So naturally, Scully's got to take the lead on this one. I just dislike intensity.
Dislike intensity.
Thank you. That is what I was trying to say. I dislike intensely the supernatural nature of our villain. He's got these powers that can't be explained away, and there's absolutely zero discussion of them because that's a loose thread that might break the entire episode, and there's just not enough time to do this sweeping story. So,
yeah,
that's where it fails. It's too big.
Yep. And we covered that, so I won't harp on it too much, but it's just an episode. I mean, about all this one really has for me is the special guest stars.
Yeah.
And the butting of heads between the agents. I do really get drawn in when they're discussing their opposite views, no matter who I agree with. I think Mulder can be a little too dicky, but he makes good points. As characters that we're going to be with for 9 or 10 years, it's interesting to see them kind of combat each other in this way. And it's still early enough in the show that, okay, we're seeing how this is going to play out in the future. Yeah. Maybe there'll be some growth, maybe not. I do find it hard to believe that Mulder just can't process any religious symbolism. His brain just tilts like a pinball machine. It's not aliens, so he doesn't believe. So
yeah. Well, that's the obvious pull, right? It's like, well, why can you believe in aliens, but you can't believe in miracles? Like they both... kind of defy.
They're both miraculous.
Well, and to that end, why does Scully believe in miracles but not in aliens? You know,
exactly. So, it goes both ways. Yeah. And I think a logical jump here would be to, over the course of the show, have each of them kind of grow and be more accepting of the others and realize that maybe they are playing it a little too hard. You know, it would have been interesting to see if they had kind of soften to each other's views over time, but maybe not.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I'm not going to harp on this episode too much. It's a whatever episode. I give it maybe a 4 or 5. My favorite parts again being the guest actors, shortly used, a little too small. Yeah. But
even if Arlie Ermey played Simon Gates, I think it would have been better.
That would have been amazing.
It would have been.
Because you get more time with him, right? Think about it. 4 days of that on set. Oof. Absolutely.
That'd be brilliant.
Well, and not to take anything away from Simon Gates' actor.
Oh, no, he was fine. I just think
he was fine. Just written, but there was just nothing to play.
He was written so it wrong was just, for the episode. I think that
he was just a body.
They have shown, like, they wanted this to be black and white. They wanted it to be good versus evil and no gray area. And they have done such good episodes where they give a character to the villain. You know, it's like, we know who the bad guy is. You've introduced us to him in scene one. So now we have to go through the entire episode with him.
Yep.
Why are you making it so painfully obvious? And at the end, you give us a little insight about him, but it's too late. So
too late. Don't care.
So listeners, this episode for listener comment, we only had one from Emily Messenger, who also didn't mind revelations. Always enjoy the juxtaposition of Scully as the believer and Mulder as the skeptic. Yep. I think we have covered that ground.
Fair enough. Yeah. That's really, and that's the thing. That's all you can really care about. Yeah. It's I'm going to stop making noises.
Use your words.
On a certain level, that's all these episodes are, the religious ones. Mm. It's about the dynamic between Mulder and Scully. It's less about the story. And it's more about how these two agents react to each other. And that's kind of weird to think of it that way, because in the end, like we have discussed, this religious you know, revelations that things are happening and we're just not paying attention, it just doesn't come to fruition. So these episodes are just vehicles for these two to argue.
Ultimately, that's it. Like, they get to expose their opinions, but in terms of actually doing anything, like, I mean, you know me, I don't really like it when the episode has the characters as tourists, and they're predominantly tourists in this, just sort of catching up. Like, they can't protect Kevin. They don't really stop the bad guy. If you look at it from the point of view of really, this is God speaking to Scully and using Kevin as the vehicle. That's really what the episode is trying to do, is to try and awaken her spirit to the idea that he's there, or she is there, God, you know, whatever you want to, however you want to present this.
How dare you?
I know, but yeah.
How dare you aggressively gender God?
The thrust of the episode is just that she is being challenged on her convictions and being asked to rise to the occasion. And she does take that leap of faith to go to the recycling plant because that's where the clues have led her. And she goes to essentially be a witness to Kevin surviving randomly as he's escorted into the recycler. You know, she doesn't take a shot.
It's escorted into the
recycler. Yeah, it's just
that's a nice way of putting
it. It's a weird little scene at the end. Like, if you want to make her a hero, then she takes a shot and hits his leg and he tumbles over and manages to take Kevin with him. And you have this moment of, damn it, I was so close and I failed. But no, Kevin has managed to hold on, and then she saves him. But she's just there when
almost happens, killing the kid. Yeah. Okay. Well, that is the episode, ladies and gentlemen. I think we have beat this one to death.
Yeah.
We don't want to keep going. I think we've said our piece, and we thank Emily for writing in. She's always on the ball with that. I'll give her that.
She's one of our prominent listener commenters, for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. So thank you. Andrew, if you would like to say goodbye, please do so.
In the words of Arlie Ermey, thanks for coming, everybody, and don't let the blood squirt in your eyes on the way out.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you liked what you heard, please rate and review on your podcast app of choice. Andrew and I would be eternally grateful to you fine, fine people for helping us expand and get the word out. Also, we've got a killer group on Facebook. Feel free to join in on the discussion at facebook.com/groups/thisisnothappeningpod and become an official member of the syndicate. We do polls and we have questions for every episode to give you guys the opportunity to chime in and possibly let your voice be heard on our recordings. And please join us on our new Twitter at TINHXFilesPod, no dash, to stay up to date on everything moment to moment. Thank you, and remember, don't stop swimming.